Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Daniel, we are back with the Eater Upsell.
Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you. Yeah. Welcome to you.
It's really good to be here, you know.
Great. My name is Amanda Clute. I'm the editor-in-chief of Eater.
My name is Daniel Janine. I am a producer, and we make the Eater Upsell, a show where every week we count down the biggest, the most important, the funniest stories in the food world and separate them with a sound of a ding like this.
Okay, this week on the show, Daniel, we are going to talk about food halls and what happens when the fridge breaks.
Ooh, what happens?
Well, wait and see. Wait and see.
Yeah. We're going to talk about
the decline and fall of Dean and DeLuca, an upscale grocer.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about a pretty crazy lawsuit.
Pretty crazy lawsuit.
A gaffe from a writer in Texas.
A little gaffe.
And so much more.
So much more. Stay tuned.
Before we get into it, I again want to plug the Eater Young Gun Summit coming up on July 27th in Brooklyn, New York City. New announcement regarding the summit. Amy Sedaris is one of our headliners.
Who's interviewing her?
Me.
Wow.
Yeah, jealous.
Yeah.
She is one of my favorite comedians. I love her surreal humor. Her show on True TV is so good. It's so funny. I can't get over it. So I'm going to try to get my shit together before this interview so I don't just, I don't know, fall over myself. Also at the summit, we are going to preview some changes coming to this podcast. So if you live in New York, get a ticket. It's $60 and come on
over to Brooklyn. Hold on. These tickets are $60.
Yeah.
And it is a criminal underpricing.
Yep.
It's like a whole day of stuff. This isn't even me showing it off anymore. This is more
directing anger
towards you because like all
business
Eater events,
malpractice.
They're totally under, they're way below what they should be marked because it's not like people see $60 and they're like, that's probably what a talk would cost, like an expensive talk.
Yeah.
This is a whole day of stuff with like tastings, like past hors d'oeuvres and tastings from some of the like New York's coolest restaurants.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And cocktails and a party.
I would probably
pay $60 if I didn't work here to come hang out with these people because I'd be like, who are you going to meet? You know? Me?
Daniel Janine.
No.
Marcus Samuelson. Preeti Meestry. I mean, there's so much. There's so many. Amy Sedaris.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even care about I care about the celebrities, but I'm more interested in meeting the other people that would come to this thing.
Yeah. Fellow guests.
Fellow guests.
Network. Network the shit out of this.
So I'll be there. Especially, you know, we're probably going to do something on stage. We'll tell a couple jokes. Who knows?
Also, Daniel's going to be at the help desk for a lot of the day.
Don't blow my cover. Listen, don't ask me for anything.
If they want to find you.
Yeah.
You'll be there.
Did you say most of the day? You asked me if I could do a shift. Is a shift now most of the day?
I'm just trying to get people in the door, okay? Maybe there'll be a two-hour shift. We'll let you know.
How long are these shifts?
It's an eight-hour shift.
That's not a shift. That's a job, okay? Do some shifts.
I'll pay you in Winsan.
Okay, cool. There'll be some merch. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You're bonkers not to get these tickets.
Come to the thing. Let's get to stories.
Okay.
Daniel, have you heard about the upscale grocer chain Dean and DeLuca and how they are shutting many of their stores in the United States?
Yeah, I read that this morning.
Oh, this morning?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crazy, right?
Crazy. Seems sad. I don't know. What's your take?
I don't have a take. I just think it's really interesting, all the weird behind-the-scenes financial stuff that I didn't know about. Basically, this was a... It started as a small indie chain in the late 70s in Soho, New York City.
Yeah.
Back when that neighborhood was all just like artist lofts. They were one of the first to stock really fancy foods and kind of like gourmet I don't know, stuff like balsamic vinegar.
Rare products, for sure.
Rare products.
Yeah.
They expanded and expanded. They ended up all over the country. They had stores in Tokyo and the Middle East, and they were everywhere. Then they were bought in 2014 by Pace Development, which was a Thai real estate group. And since then, shit has hit the fan. Because the development group is having a liquidity crisis. So they bought the chain for $140 million, and then they spent $100 million in the U.S. to try to bolster it. But elsewhere in their portfolio, they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars. And I think it's hit this point where they just can't afford to keep things going.
To keep it alive.
So now in the United States, there are going to be, I think as of this week, 6 stores left. They used to have over 40 in the U.S. They had this fancy new concept in the Meatpacking District in New York, where last week the mogul, the Thai mogul, told the New York Times that he's obsessed with it and he's keeping it open. And then this week he told them, actually, no, it's closing, but I'm committed to keeping the concept alive somehow. And it just seems like a total mess.
Yeah. I have an interesting experience with Dean and DeLuca, because when I first moved to New York 8 or 9 years ago, I knew of it only as that insanely expensive grocery store in Soho that I just thought was such a tourist trap.
Yeah.
You know, but digging into it a little bit more, like, you find, I found out that they were the first store to carry a lot of, like, exclusive products. They gave a lot of young distributors and young companies a chance. And at some point, like, Jenny's Ice Cream, it was the first place in New York to carry Jenny's. So they have been a display shelf, for lack of a better word, for a lot of cool up-and-coming brands. I think that's pretty credible. I mean, they've invested in some things that are not just cash-grabby, dumb Soho coffee shop for $7, like I kind of had it in my head that they were.
Right, and like for a lot of these brands, it was a big deal to get chosen by Dean and DeLuca. And on the other end of it, now these are the ones in the New York Times piece who are complaining that they're owed tens of thousands of dollars. And when you're a small creative vendor, being owed tens of thousands of dollars can be, you know, life or death. They owe Bien Cui $56,000. They owe Colson Patisserie $24,000. Amy's Bread $51,000.
Amy's Cookies, Carla from Eater New York reported that they were owed $71,000, and they make clothes because of the Dean and DeLuca. Yeah, it reminds me of, just in terms of grocery stores doing a lot of buying, it reminds me, I talk to people who have products and they're considering selling them in Whole Foods, and they get the call. Some people get the call from Whole Foods like, hey, listen, we want to roll out your products for next year. And I always think, holy shit, congratulations, that's awesome. That must mean the start of like a major turning point in your company. But it's not always a guaranteed yes by these companies, because what that means is they have to do crazy ramp up of production. And then if Whole Foods decides not to carry them, then they just have huge additional product and nowhere to really sell it. So it is sad, and it is wild, the relationship that these brands forge with a major outpost, and crazy sad when it just goes down.
Yeah,
because it can take a lot of them with them.
There's a funny line in the Times piece where it says, the remaining outlets in the United States are increasingly stocked with Coca-Cola and Chobani yogurt instead of their Kraft-made equivalents. It's like, once you see the Chobani and the Dean and DeLuca, then you know they're going downhill.
That's the cockroaches.
Daniel.
Yo.
There's a food hall in Brooklyn called the Time Out Food Hall.
Yeah, I've been.
You've been?
Yeah, I've been.
Oh, cool.
You want to know why?
Why?
Because I love food halls. I'm always curious to see what they do. I'm also interested when they're branded. Timeout's branding. Timeout is kind of known. You know, we see Timeout however we see Timeout. Free Subway magazine kind of like declined over the years.
Yep.
Now is a little bit, I don't know, not pulpy, but a little bit like, I don't know, foodie tabloidy a little. I don't know.
Foodie tabloid?
What is Timeout now?
I think you're right.
But it's all over the place, and it's huge.
They have these food halls now. So I'm telling you about this Time Out food hall because their fridges broke, and the Department of Health in New York City shut the entire thing down. And that's an interesting element I had never thought of before with food halls, which is just shared resources like a fridge.
The entire thing is
shut down.
A giant walk-in in the back.
So it's not just like, oh, the Roberta's doesn't have pizza today and the Roberta's is screwed. It's like every vendor.
Everyone is screwed. Interesting for two reasons. One, even without this, even if that is shutting down, they must get into, that must be an awkward, tense thing.
Because when someone steals your avocados or something?
Even in one restaurant where everyone works together, fridge space is at a premium. Ooh. And people being like, yo, like garde manger, get the hell out of my fridge space.
Yeah.
So like if it's, you know, Clinton Street Bakery and like Pat LaFreda, you know, fighting over their mise en place, that's
totally.
Got to be tense. Second,
especially if you have something stinky, something messy.
You know what I first thought about when I heard this is like, if I had a vendetta against a food hall, which not impossible, mm-hmm, I think I could go through my life and stumble into a vendetta against a food hall. You sneak in the middle of the night and shut that friggin' fridge down. You ruin the entire place.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like that's the heart of the food hall. And like you cut that cord and the entire thing goes down like the Luke flying in an episode 3 to the Death Star and like firing the beam at that one tiny little energy cube.
Exactly.
Except that energy cube is a bunch of tins of sardines. I would take.
I got actually a text message to my personal phone yesterday from
really?
Bender just yeah. saying like,
lay off.
No, just saying, screw them.
Right.
They're lying to everyone and to us, and they're like, it's taking forever to reopen, and we're pissed.
Who is lying?
Like, I don't know, whoever's running the Time Out Food Hall.
Oh, my God.
So there is some tension.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an epic collapse. So it's tough because they probably all have a bunch of prep stored in that. Just like, and it's hot outside. Imagine getting all that prep, bringing it to the vans. Some of them don't have second restaurants where they're going to be able to store it. I don't know. Oof. It's hot.
It's hot. Anyway.
But, you know, they can all cool off
about.
At the Soho House pool.
I bet they're not invited.
Amanda, there was a story that was going around online, courtesy of Texas Monthly, that our own Nadia Chaudhry called to attention on Twitter, and we have her on the line right now, and she is going to break it down for us. Nadia, how are you?
Hi.
Hey.
I'm great.
So what happened?
So Texas Monthly, which is a very big deal publication in the state of Texas, obviously, wrote an exclusive feature on the opening of this big deal restaurant called Vixen's Wedding, which is a go-in Portuguese-inspired restaurant as part of the Arrive East Austin Hotel in East Austin, which opened last week. So the original lead of the feature, I felt, was very dismissive and I would also say ignorant of Goa as an actual place where people are from and people live and understand.
What was the lead?
Okay, so the original lead, which I will say has been edited since then, reads as, quote, let's face it, to most of us, quote, Goa is a Scrabble word. Although if we reach into the dim memories of high school geography, we might recall that it has something to do with India, .. and Portugal.
Yikes.
I'm Bangladeshi American. I read that lead and I'm offended immediately.
Yeah. So the author is the writer is assuming that no one from Goa or anyone with any connection to Goa could possibly be reading this.
Basically, yes. Yeah. So one, it's offensive because you're just saying that Goa is just a random Scrabble word that like probably means nothing to you as a reader of Texas Monthly, and that's assuming a lot of your reader. My issue with it is that, you know, it's fair to understand that like maybe your readers don't know what Goa is or where Goa is or what the history of Goa is. But like, I think it's our responsibility as food writers and food editors to respectfully explain what these things, these cultures, these regions, these cuisines are to our readers without othering them.
Yeah.
And that lead is completely othering Goa and Goans.
I just want to say, Daniel, I don't know if you play Scrabble.
Oh, yeah.
You can't use Goa. That's a proper
word. It's a
place,
right?
Yeah. Right?
When I tweeted this out, that was a big thing that people kept replying back about. Yeah.
It's funny because
like people, really Scrabble enthusiasts, were very annoyed about that.
Like, no way could you play that word.
Actually, I think what they meant was crossword, because it is probably
You could use it in a crossword.
You could definitely use it in a crossword.
Not in Scrabble.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was bothering me.
No,
in
please.
In addition to the the very serious issues.
But Nadia, these things happen, right? Like, people make mistakes.
Yeah, do you see this a lot?
Everyone can do better, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are things that I've said, that I've written, that maybe looking back on, I maybe shouldn't have said it that specific way. Mm-hmm. Everyone can do better. Another big issue that I took with the Texas Monthly piece is that, you know, yes, there was a bit of outrage, I guess is the right word, over the lead. Friends and colleagues of mine have tweeted about it as well. And then they edited the lead to take out all of that Scrabble stuff and like the, you know, maybe from high school, whatever.
I forgot about the high school part.
And they acknowledged it with just a parentheses saying that this introduction has been edited.
Mm-hmm. Mm, but they didn't
say
why.
My issue with that was that, you know, they didn't acknowledge what was originally incorrect or what was offensive about that lead and just kind of brushed it off.
And has Texas Monthly, have you heard anything from them?
I know they replied on Twitter to actually a former Eater Austin editor apologizing, saying, you know, that we agree that this is quoting their tweet. We agree that this was the wrong approach to introducing the cuisine and takes away from the reporting of the dishes throughout the piece.
Yeah.
We've changed the intro and appreciate you sharing your thoughts on it. The editor did reach out to me and we had a private conversation on the phone about it.
And they were like, we realized it was a crossword thing, not a Scrabble thing.
That should be the big apology.
I think it's a shame that there wasn't more of a public acknowledgement of what had happened, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a cool, as you said, it's a cool opportunity for people to actually learn a little bit about what Goa means.
Mm-hmm. I was the one that originally reported on the restaurant from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I did a lot of research on, you know, Goa and its history and, you know, the whole, it was a Portuguese colony for a very long time and what that means for its cuisine. And I think it's our jobs as reporters and editors and writers to really do our research as much as we can before we write about something. We have to throw in our own knowledge.
Right.
This goes to show why I think personally, it's not even personally, it's a general, people of color editors and writers are important because they offer diverse views and knowledges that otherwise people might not be aware of as writers and editors. I'm sure Texas Monthly read that original lead and didn't see anything wrong with it because to them it made sense.
Yeah. Hey, well, anyway, it seems like a really interesting restaurant. I hope that this micro scandal doesn't bury out any buzz that the place was building.
Thank you for the tweet and for talking about it. Usually Texas Monthly does a pretty great job of what they do, so we'll hope that they can do better.
Agreed.
All right. Thank you, Nadia.
Thanks, Amanda.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, The Art of Simplified Finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Amanda, this is a small story, but I thought you would find it funny. I live close to St. Mark's, the iconic, legendary New York street. Anyway, there was a coffee shop called Noble Tree Coffee that opened on the corner of St. Mark's. I found it notable when it opened because the aesthetic of it was definitely not St. Mark's. You know, St. Mark's is tattoo shops and weed shops and now some good actually Chinese and Taiwanese restaurants. But this coffee shop seemed like a financial, like kind of a uppity financial district coffee shop or like Blue Bottle vibe.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I don't think this doesn't fit into me, but like, what do I know? And I actually never tried the coffee there, but I walked by a bunch and all of a sudden this place is shutting down. 5 months in, it shuts down.
Wow.
They put up a sign on their window saying, thank you for the support to Noble Tree Coffee. Because of the slow foot traffic at this location, we were forced to close. Please continue visiting our other locations at World Trade Center, Westfield Center. That makes sense, you know, that's a uppity financial district. I never saw that. I've just seen this blog post on Evie Grieve. What's funny about it is posted right underneath the note is another note from East Village residents saying, Noble Tree, please don't blame the neighborhood for slow foot traffic. Maybe it was your mediocre coffee.
Oof.
And bad service.
Ouch.
Sincerely, East Village residents.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that.
Do you love it?
Yes, because also this, I'm looking at a photo of it that's on Evie Grieve, a neighborhood blog, and it's not just scrawled on there by someone who's angry and walking by.
No.
The person obviously
read
it, went home, wrote this note up on their computer, printed it out.
Yeah. Cut it out because it's small.
Cut it out, got some tape, went there, taped it to the bottom.
Yeah. It's so awesome. It's just like, the East Village to me is, especially around there, like the tension I'm sure between St. Mark's and the people who have just been living there forever.
Yeah.
East Village are kind of like, to me, I see them as a little bit of the standard East Villager as kind of a, certainly the old school ones, kind of a curmudgeon. And this just absolutely plays into
and
that.
And if they've been there for a while, I'm assuming the type of person who would tape this note up, they've seen all kinds of things come and go.
Yeah.
They see, especially in that strip, like they see places come and go every year.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. This is not a location issue. This is a you issue.
Also from Noble Tree Coffee, it's a you issue. I just can't imagine there's ever a reason to blame anyone else. They're not even really. They're saying slow foot traffic. Yeah. But like, there's only one thing you need to write with this note. And it is, thank you so much for your patronage. Please find us, we're
don't
closing.
Don't get defensive about
Please
it.
Please find just us at our other location.
This is closing. Here's where you can find us if you really love us.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.
Anyway.
Ding, ding. Okay, Daniel, there is a somewhat shocking, I think, story this week about multiple fast food chains that are reportedly trialing license plate recognition systems for their drive-thrus.
Yeah. And people were going crazy about this.
You mean like online?
Yeah.
Freaking out?
People were freaking out.
I'm a little freaked out
by it.
Are
you freaked out?
I'm a little freaked out.
Tim Forrester on our team wrote the headline, would you like a side of surveillance with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, people that are people that don't want their rights and privacies violated are super angry.
Yep. Well, I think the timing isn't great because especially in America right now, we're talking a lot about surveillance. There was a recent story about how ICE is using DMV records to compile face recognition and figure out who you are and where you are. And I think having McDonald's also tracking your license plate, adding on to that, is just like, it's a touch too much.
I guess the only reason that this doesn't faze me is because it seems like something they could have done 10 years ago.
Well, should we talk about why they're doing it and what
it
actually is?
They're doing it so that they can build a preference profile for all their customers.
Right. So ideally, you would go up to the drive-thru because you've been there so many times before. They recognize your license plate and they're like, oh, Daniel Janine, double cheeseburger and a Coke. Here you go. Right.
And also maybe if I have an allergy or, things like that.
I don't know. One thing that's important to say is that you would have to opt into the system, I think.
According to early reports.
Yeah. But it doesn't really make me feel more comfortable with the fact that they're doing it.
Does this feel 2019 to you at all? Like 2019 to me feels like there's a bug in my fries that's going to tell me at the what speed do I eat them so that it can take data back and maybe they'll change their oil to last 3 hours instead of 2 hours. I don't think that license plate number capturing feels even close to as invasive as anything else
maybe
that is happening right now.
I don't want McDonald's to know who I am.
That's where it comes.
Or
that's
anyone to know where I'm dining.
The thing is, though, everyone knows where you're dining. The real powers out there, the real watchtowers.
Right, you're being tracked at all times anyway.
The real watchtowers also know
but
what you order from McDonald's.
Nihilistic look.
Right.
Like,
so it's
everyone's, brother is looking at you anyway. Might as well just let McDonald's.
Why not let little brother know what
you
order?
Why not opt into their program where they track your every move and know how many fries you ordered this year? It's fine.
But I guess it does bring up an interesting question of surveillance. Like, I don't mean to look at it in such a nihilistic sense, but if you accept that we are being constantly watched, and it's not like someone is there watching us, just that everything is recorded, then why bother fight a minor version of that? Why bother fight someone who is like, I don't know, if the MTA wants to track what time we typically use the subway and it's like, don't, that's my data or whatever, at the same time, someone else knows everything. Like, what's the point? But I think it is important. It is important. Let's not pile it on. Yeah. Amanda, I saw something online talking about Duff Goldman and how heartwarming a thing he did was.
This is the Ace of Cakes guy?
This is the Ace of Cakes.
Charm
City Cakes, one of the most famous cake makers.
He makes the cakes that look like other things.
A field that I don't entirely understand.
Don't love it.
I'm willing to be pushed back on this, but I think that all culinary development and innovation should be used to making things more interesting tasting, both texturally and flavor wise. That said, he seems like the most, and all by all accounts, is the most, one of the most kind and wonderful people in the famous food world.
Could be.
I have an Instagram post that he put up that was described as one of the most heartwarming acts. This came up when a 5 or 8 year old boy passed him this note that you're about to see, and he put it on the internet. So if you could read it out.
Okay. It says, Duff, thank you for making, what is that?
Baking.
Oh, thank you for making baking cool for boys. Oh, I mean, that's sweet. You don't like it?
What? I just don't think baking is uncool for boys. And I just think kid's mindset is strange.
There is a large section of the world that thinks boys shouldn't be baking.
Yeah.
I don't think
they're violent about that.
Not in our bubble. I bet there's a lot of subtle shit that boys get where it's like, no, baking's the girl's thing.
Yeah.
Or like, girls make cupcakes, not you.
Yeah.
Where if like a little boy says to his dad, like, I want to make a bunch of cupcakes. The dad could be like, why don't you come get outside with me?
Right.
Play some sports.
Right.
Like, that seems so reductive and stereotypical, but I do think it happens. I think it's real.
Okay, so you think that there is some, this is a kind, anyway, Duff responded, walked into, how would you feel? You have a, how old is your son now?
My son is three.
Three.
This Caleb who wrote this note is 5.
Yeah. Would you support your son's baking endeavors?
Of course, but.
You are the worst person to ask.
I'm like wildly progressive and I live in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, of course, like he better bake.
Not play sports.
No, he is 100% not allowed to play football. Like, no chance.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe that's it. There's two kinds of parents. Football parents, baking parents.
Yeah, will your boy be a baker or a football
Duff player? Responded, walked into Duff Cake Mix this morning and got handed this. Thanks, Caleb. Baking is cool for literally everybody.
That's right. Thanks, Duff.
So your opinion of Duff? Going north, going south, staying where it is.
Love Duff. Daniel, there is an interesting lawsuit I think we should discuss.
I love a lawsuit.
Buckle up. You love a lawsuit?
Buckle up.
So a former employee is suing Gramercy Tavern in New York City because they were asked to wear a uniform that was male specific, and this employee identifies as gender non-specific. So I think this is interesting because I've noticed this in restaurants for so long where you have a female waitress wearing a tie and a vest. And it's like, guys, couldn't you come up with something better? Like, why do they have to wear a tie if they don't want to wear a tie? Or maybe they do, but it's just the uniforms just seem silly in so many circumstances.
But that is not the same concern. Your concern there is that everyone's wearing the same thing.
My concern was that they're making this male outfit and having everybody wear it. That's different than what this is, which is they had to wear a tie and a suit jacket as like the boys' uniform. And they didn't have a gender non-specific outfit that they could wear. So, and they got in trouble whenever they wouldn't wear a tie.
I mean, I just think this is probably a sign of things to come that
it's an
absolute softball for restaurants to just offer multiple uniform options.
I think one takeaway is that having that uniforms should be pretty neutral.
Yeah.
Have lots of options for a variety of people or no uniform. What do you think? Have you ever been to like a super, super high end place?
Without a uniform?
Yeah.
It's awkward.
It's awkward?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, unless everyone's wearing gray or something. I mean, how do you feel about
where everyone wears
a certain shade
green.
Or something like that? Sure.
I've noticed that at some really nice places where people just wear like beautiful shades of green. And it's usually they had some expensive tailor make it all for them.
Yeah. But I'm not against it. I mean, I feel like when you reach the echelons of hyper fine dining, where every detail has to be is mulled over, I think that a uniform is appropriate in those circumstances. But it's very easy to make gender non-conforming uniforms.
Or just give people all the options. Like, here's the array. Choose whatever you want.
Yeah.
You want to wear the tie? Wear the tie. You don't want to wear the tie? Fine.
Have you been to any restaurants with silly uniforms? There was this restaurant, I believe it's closed now, called Le Turtle in the Lower East in the Lower East Side, where everyone, I swear to God, wore like brown potato sacks. They were like the hippest thing I've ever seen. They looked awful.
I know that whenever the uniform is plaid shirts, it drives me nuts because.
Because they look like tablecloths.
No, because like usually like I'm wearing a plaid shirt or like someone I'm with is wearing. It's like, don't pick something that's too close to what many people wear. Because then you're like, oh God, it's a good thing I'm waitress.
If only
here.
They had your license plate information, they would know that you were a frequent plaid shirt wearer and then they would switch the. I guess it is interesting, like in what hospitality is a unique field where they have uniforms. Like I'm thinking about what's a fancy thing. Like a fancy car dealership or something, like they wouldn't have a uniform.
There's fancy car dealership.
I'm just saying, like, it's a very theatrical element that still remains in the hospitality world that doesn't carry over. I mean, in hotels, I guess people would have uniforms.
Airlines.
Airlines. I'm surprised we haven't. I'm sure there are some lawsuits out there.
I mean, there were back in the day because they'd always make women wear. Skirts,
yeah,
and skirts of a certain length, and they used to have flight attendants weigh in. Anyway, that's a whole thing.
Weigh in on the outfit choices.
Weigh in on a scale, so no.
Jesus, I mean, they weigh the bags.
You got the scales there already. Anyway, Daniel,
yo,
something for restaurants to be thinking about. Daniel, we did it. We went through all our stories. One thing I want to add. If you have a funny restaurant story, or if you have any complaints about customers that ask for weird, weird stuff, tell us at upselleater.com because we want to hear about them.
Let
and maybe,
us know.
Maybe even share them on the air.
Oh, we will share them on the air.
We will.
If you send a weird thing, if you send an email titled weird thing, I'm pretty 99% sure
99%.
We'll share it on the air.
Not 100% though, because you never know. Send us some feedback. Send us some thoughts. Want us to talk about anything? Let us know. Thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah.
This show is produced by Martha Daniel, our wonderful producer. It is hosted by me, Amanda Clute, you, Daniel Janine.
Hell yeah.
And that's it. It's a three-person team now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're at this rate, we'll be four by next year.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We love y'all. Talk to you next week.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.